From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Latin America's first Pope, Francis, is in Brazil, where strikes and protests have been boiling, where the Catholic population has been shrinking. Pope Francis says he wants the Catholic Church to be the Church of the Poor. Will that message win over Brazilians? Many are living in poverty, but a booming evangelical movement preaches a gospel of prosperity. This hour on Point, the Pope of the Poor comes to Brazil. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you see in the meeting of this Pope and this country, Brazil? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There were cheers on Monday as Pope Francis emerged from his plane in Rio de Janeiro for his visit to Brazil. But this has also been a time of turmoil in Brazil. After years of booming economy, there have been setbacks and protests over inequality. A bus fare hike protest exploded into massive demonstrations around the country. Last month, demonstrators clashed with police in the streets of São Paulo. Into that recent history comes the Pope. Here he is speaking Portuguese at his welcome ceremony on Monday, saying that he has faith in Brazilians. Pope Francis.
Aprendi que para ter acesso ao povo brasileiro.
The Pope saying, I have learned that to gain access to the Brazilian people, it is necessary to pass through its great heart. So let me knock gently at this door, and there he is in Brazil. Joining us now from Aparecida, Brazil, is Philip Pulela. He covers the Vatican for Reuters. Philip, thank you very much for being with us. Remind us why the Pope is at this site, so important to Brazilians.
Hi. I'd like to remind you guys I'm a BU alum. I graduated from SPC in 76. Anyway, he is at Aparecida because this is one of the major shrines in Latin America. It's a Marian shrine. The Pope is very devoted to Mary, the Mother of God. And he wanted to come here. He asked that the program, which was originally worked out for his predecessor, Pope Benedict, who, as we know, resigned, Francis asked that the program be changed so he could make this. So we have a mostly religious day today in that sense, because he's saying Mass right now. It's his first Mass in public since he's arrived. But he is already speaking about social issues, as you mentioned in your introduction, and basically in his homily, which he just finished a few seconds ago, he said he urged Latin America's youth to shun what he called the ephemeral idols of success and money and pleasure and go back to traditional values.
The percentage of Brazilians following the Roman Catholic faith has fallen precipitously. Back in the 40s, 99%. More recently, 62 or 57%, depending on how you on who you read. What's the Pope's? But it's still the country with the most Catholics of any single country in the world. What is Pope Francis' agenda here?
Well, I mean, he doesn't have an agenda per se, in the sense that if you want to call it an agenda, he wants to revitalize the church on this continent. As you say, the Catholic Church has been losing faithful to some evangelicals over the years. This has been going on for decades. His two or three predecessors have also had to deal with this problem. But now we have a Latin American pope who knows the situation at hand, firsthand, being Argentine. The situation with the evangelicals is that Catholics in Latin America feel that their services are lively, that they understand people's problems better. So the Catholic Church, which is the largest Catholic country in the world, has its work cut out for it to try and stem this hemorrhaging. Now, if anybody could do it, it probably is Francis, who has this very, very simple touch. And which has won praise nearly universally after a long period of scandals in the Vatican and a pontiff whose image was much more aloof than the present one.
Philip, you're there in Aparecida, important shrine site. This Pope Francis, in his short time as Pope, has already positioned himself as the Pope of the Poor. How does that play in Brazil?
Well, it's playing very well because, I mean, simply, I mean, the as you said, just 3 days after his election, when he met the journalists who covered the transition period, including myself, he said that how much he would like to see a church, a poor church for the poor. So he said both things, for the poor, but also that the church itself has to be poor. It was very well received in Latin America, and it is being very well received here. This is a pope who speaks through images. He has, back at the Vatican, not moved into the spacious 12 or 13-room papal apartments in the Apostolic Palace. He's remained in a suite in a guest house in the Vatican, which is, quite frankly, smaller than my own apartment. Rides around more or less in normal cars rather than the big bulletproof ones. This has also presented some security problems, as we saw on Monday. But that said, I think that the image that people see of him stopping his car to get out, to kiss babies, to talk to people, to have them touch him, that he touches them, and to be seen riding in a normal car as much as possible, rather than in these distant, thick glass black limousines, sends a signal that I am as much as possible like you, and I was once exactly like you, because I am a child of immigrants and poor immigrants who came to Latin America from Italy. That is his background, and he shows it with gestures.
Philip Pulela covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters with Pope Francis today in Aparecida, Brazil. Philip, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Pope raising economic issues even before he arrived in Brazil, where there have been some high tensions recently. Here he was on that flight to Brazil. This was on Monday, talking about the importance of keeping young people employed.
He said, "We're running the risk of raising a generation who don't have work. With work comes people's dignity when they earn their living. Young people now are in a crisis."
Pope Francis on his way to Brazil. He's there. With us now from Rio de Janeiro is Andrew Chestnut, chair of Catholic Studies at Virginia Commonwealth University's School of World Studies. Andrew Chestnut in Rio, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington is Paulo Sotero, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Paulo Sotero, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to be with you.
Paulo, what's this moment at which the Pope comes to Brazil, a country that had a decade of super growth, kind of the Latin American economic superpower, but in the last month and more, we've seen enormous protests in the streets in Brazil. What's the moment at which this Pope visits this country?
It's a moment of promise, it's a fertile moment of, I think, renewal of Brazilian democracy. Brazil has experienced much progress, both politically, socially, economically, but seems to have hit a sort of a wall where expectations for a more decent kind of politics, better outcomes in economic policy, better priorities in public spending, or more ethical type of collective life is on demand. The people are crying about that in the streets. Those were, although there were clashes, there were acts of vandalism in June in the protests, those mm-hmm. were mostly peaceful protests mm-hmm. mobilized outside of political parties. And I think the arrival of the Pope is very important because it feeds into that moment and it gives it more quality, because this is a man that is calling people's attention to focus on substance. And this is the way I understand his focus, his homilies on the need to revalue life and move away from, as he said, the values of money, pleasure, success, things like that.
Andrew Chestnut, a high-stakes political moment for Brazil. You've also said a high-stakes visit for this Pope, Andrew.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. As the previous journalist alluded to, we've seen just a precipitous decline in Catholic membership going back to the 1950s. The latest statistic is Brazil only 57% Catholic, and among Brazilian youth from ages 16 to 24, that figure has dropped to only 44% Catholic versus 38% Protestant today. So actually the number one reason I have argued that we actually see our first Latin American pope is because of Latin America's and Brazil's hemorrhaging of Catholic membership going back to the 1950s. And yes, this is just a monumental trip in that Brazil really is the most important country in the entire world for both the global Catholic Church and for global Christianity at large.
Why the most important country in the world for the Catholic Church and beyond?
Because not only is it home to the largest Catholic population on Earth, and this hasn't come up yet, it's also home to the largest Pentecostal population on Earth. And because of the overwhelming success of Pentecostal churches since the 1950s, Brazilian Christianity and Latin American Christianity in general has become Pentecostalized. And so today, by far, the most vital movement within the Brazilian and much of the Latin American church is the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, which is the Catholic Church's version of Pentecostalism.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Pope Francis and Brazil, the Pope of the Poor, a must-win country for Catholics, and Brazil's own struggles. This morning, Pope Francis conducted his first public mass in Brazil at the Shrine of Our Lady of Aparecida. Here's the Pope.
Quanta alegria me dá de vir a casa da mãe de cada brasileiro, o santuário.
Pope Francis, today in Brazil, it gives me so much joy to be coming to the house of every Brazilian's mother, the shrine of Our Lady of Aparecida, and his first public mass in the country. Paulo Sotero is with us from Washington, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholar. And from Rio, Andrew Chestnut joins us, chair of Catholic Studies at Virginia Commonwealth University's School of World Studies. Let's see. Paulo, let's go first to the economics. I mean, Brazil had an amazing decade of growth. As recently as 2010 or 11, 7.5% growth. Most recent numbers I saw down around 1 or 2%. What's taken the blush off of Brazil's economic growth? What's happened?
In part are international economic conditions, in part are, lack of reforms, lack of investments in certain key areas such as infrastructure, better targeted investments in education, in health. Brazil expanded dramatically its middle class. 40 million people joined the middle class mm-hmm. in the past 8 years. But what needed to happen parallel to that was improvement of public services. It's no surprise that public transportation was the initial motive of those protests. Brazil is going through a period where it needs to revamp its economy, make it more productive, more innovative, at the same time continuing to do what we have done in the past 30 years or so, which is to consolidate and deepen democracy in Brazil.
Huge cries for movement against corruption, lots of corruption in the political class. We're hearing from people in the streets, also for more public services, as you say, for less inequality, very large in Brazil. Thousands of protesters in the streets in São Paulo, among other places, last month. Here's one protester. The bus fare increases sparked it, but here's one protester saying it's about much more than that.
The bus pass hike was a small thing, but it was a spark for this larger protest that we now need to finish to the end. Because up until now, hardly anything has been done in this country.
And here at her welcoming speech for Pope Francis on Monday in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff saying the Pope encourages the people to strive for social justice.
We know that we can face new challenges and continue improving our reality. That was what made hundreds of thousands of young people take to the streets. Democracy, as Your Holiness knows, unchains the desire for more democracy.
the president there of Brazil. Andrew Chestnut, talk about the Pope's challenge here. On the one hand, you say it's very important for the church. On the other, he's stepping right into Brazilian politics. Brazil had a very strong history in liberation theology that the Vatican worked very hard over a long time to squelch. And this Pope, in his previous life in Argentina, was not exactly on board with that. Now he's talking in favor strongly of the poor. How do his missions as Pope and how does that, intersect with this political moment in Brazil, Andrew?
Exactly, Tom. I think you've hit the head on the nail, this fascinating paradox. We know that during his tenure in Argentina, he was no partisan of liberation theology, as many as his Jesuit confreres were. Yet lately, he seemed to have adopted their discourse, critiquing capitalism left and right, and kind of presenting a preferential option for the poor, liberation theology style redux. So yeah, it's very interesting to see that. However, the interesting thing is that liberation theology and its pastoral expression of the base Christian communities never became the mass movement that it aspired to, especially here in Brazil, where it really had its most fertile soil. Not more than 4% of Brazilian Catholics ever participated in the base Christian communities affiliated with liberation theology. And so this discourse about the poor and the oppressed, I don't think will be sufficient to revitalize the church. And again, the most dynamic movement here and in much of Latin America is the Catholic Charismatic Renewal. So he's really going to have to marshal the charismatics as the foot soldiers of his new evangelization program if any success is to be had here in Latin America resuscitating the Catholic Church.
And of course, perhaps in response to the Pentecostals in part, charismatics have become very important within the Catholic Church in Brazil. Paulo Sotero, I'll ask each of you this, but how is it that the Pentecostal movement became so strong in Brazil? What was their approach, their appeal, Paulo?
Well, the structural motive is urbanization of Brazil. Brazil in 1930 was an 80% agricultural rural country. In 1980, Brazil had become an 80% rural urban country.
Wow.
So
big
that
switch.
Movement helped. But their appeal is as the church after Vatican's second, distance itself from parts of the liturgy, or more the theatrical part of the liturgy. Mm-hmm. I think the evangelicals found a fertile ground in this country that was changing, becoming more urban, and they appealed to the so-called prosperity gospel of this rising middle class. And that is, I think, the reason of their success. They are, this is the same reason of their success in the United States. Actually, they copied some of the models from the United States, the televangelism, etc. They control the second largest TV network in Brazil. They have political influence, 61 members of Congress and 3 senators.
Are Pentecostal, evangelical?
Yes, they are associated with those. Brazil has a 513 House of Representatives, the 81-member Senate, but still it's very significant. They are obviously in the record, the music industry, very important gospel music industry in Brazil, and they are very capable of using those the media to preach. Now, as Andrew has mentioned, the answer from the Catholic Church in last 10 years or 15 years was the charismatic movement, and here I completely agree. Pope Francis will have really a very big challenge to reconcile his way, his pastoral way of being a pope, with that aspect, which I think he probably resists, is resistant to. I am referring here to the charismatic movement.
That's very interesting. I want to look at that, Andrew Chestnut. I'll come to you with your interpretation of this turn from Catholicism to Pentecostalism and how the Pope's likely to relate to the most vibrant part of the Catholic Church, or this charismatic part. Let me get a couple of listeners, if I may. Fran in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Fran, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was a teacher in South America, and all of my students had at least 20 brothers and sisters. And I
Good
think
Lord.
That goes to the point. I know. He says that he's trying to help the poor, but if he doesn't let the women take the pill like the Protestants will, he's not going to be able to increase the church or end the poverty.
Fran, let me hold that thought right there. That's firsthand experience out of South America. I appreciate your call, Fran. Alex in Newton, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm Brazilian living in the States, mm-hmm. and I would say that the reason why the Catholic Church is losing ground in Brazil is because they've become obsolete.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean?
Well, they were very in favor of people when we had a dictatorship, and most recently they've became alienated from our values. They're homophobic. They don't believe in contraception. They don't even believe in HIV prevention from distributing condoms. So I think the Brazilian population is tired of having them speak for our values. We are not homophobic. We believe in contraception. They need to change if they want to be relevant.
Alex, how long have you been outside Brazil at this point?
25 years.
But you're still in touch with people there, and that's what you're hearing.
Oh, yeah, my family still lives there.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, I so appreciate your call. Andrew Chestnut, what about those first two callers who come in? Fran, who says if the church doesn't condone birth control, they've got problems with the poor. And you hear Alex's rather broad critique of the church at this point on some big points.
Yeah, I don't think that church policy on birth control really has an effect because Catholics worldwide have mostly ignored it. So, yeah, I don't think that's a major barrier for growth. And I don't think the Catholic Church has become obsolete. Again, I think it has in the last 10 to 15 years somewhat staunched the flow of converts into Pentecostal churches through the dynamism of the Catholic Charismatic Renewal. And the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, like the Pentecostals, focuses much on questions of individual spirituality, focusing on the role of the Holy Spirit in believers' lives. I don't think the church might have been somewhat obsolete and out of touch, but again, I think with its very rapid endorsement of the charismatic movement, I think it's really taken the right step. And again, I think the real task for Pope Francis is to try to put himself front and center with a movement. And I might add that he's already exhibited certain charismatic tendencies. Just a couple of months ago in Rome, he performed an impromptu exorcism on a Mexican parishioner, kind of much to the chagrin of Vatican media handlers.
A parishioner who, as I recall, said the parishioner was upset because of changes in abortion laws in Mexico.
Exactly. His demons were ascribed to legalization of abortion, specifically in Mexico City, which is home to the largest Catholic population of any city on earth.
Despite this pope having already performed a kind of low-key exorcism, Paulo Sotero suggests that for this Jesuit out of Argentina, a move toward embracing a more charismatic Catholic Church would be difficult given his background. What do you say, Andrew?
No, I don't think it will be difficult. But I think part of the great fascinating story here in his trip to Rio is, as Paulo already alluded to, can he synthesize, can he reconcile, which often have been these competing tendencies of the liberationists and the Catholic charismatics. And I'm betting that he will be able to, and I think he's shown both of those tendencies. So I'm optimistic. However, let me say that Nobody will be able to reverse what is an inexorable march toward greater pluralization of the Brazilian and Latin American religious landscape, in which Brazil probably within a couple of decades will become a non-Catholic majority country, kind of mirror image of the United States, which no longer has a Protestant majority.
Paulo Sotero, I want to come back to our Brazilian caller Alex's pointing to what she calls homophobia in the church, its stance against contraception, even stance on AIDS treatment, suggesting Brazilians are not going to fully embrace the church as long as it embraces positions like that. What do you say to that, Paulo?
Well, I think she is right. I know many people that have taken distance from the church for that precise reason. I am one of those. And I have, though, since Pope Francis been elevated to the papacy, I see a lot of people feeling somewhat engaged and invited back, because in some of his writings, although not changing doctrine, not indicating it, he seems to be open to dialogue. He seems to be to recognize the problems. In a very interesting book he wrote with the chief rabbi of Buenos Aires, Abraham Skorka, who is a very good friend of his. He deals with all those issues, and sometimes he deals with them from an anthropological point of view. Actually, both Skorka and Pope Francis are chemists, and so he cannot ignore. He has a broader view of issues like this, and I think he will be pressured, and Alex is absolutely right. He will be continue to be pressure in Brazil and in the United States and all over the place to modernize church, Catholic Church teachings and positions on some of those issues, because otherwise he will have problems gaining followers and revitalizing the church.
Andrew Chestnut in Rio, Paulo, says he doesn't see this pope having a big problem necessarily embracing a more charismatic style of Catholicism. Here he's already been in pope not so very long, already performed an exorcism. Talk about faith healing, very common in the Pentecostal church in Rome. Do you see problems for this pope in bridging those worlds, Paulo?
Yeah, I see just one aspect. You know, the man chose the name Francis. The man lives a very humble existence. And charismatics, I have been in Brazil in some of masses and some liturgies done by charismatics. It doesn't seem to me something that the Pope would be totally comfortable with. I think he would try to bridge, as Andrew suggested, the more progressive Church of the Poor, preach the base communities. He always talks and writes about the small community. Mm-hmm. That's where you have to practice your religion, etc. Mm-hmm. And to avoid the charismatic movement sometimes appears to be copying the evangelical movement, some aspects of liturgy, etc. And I it's just one impression from my readings of Pope Francis or Cardinal Bergoglio, is that he would be resistant to some aspects of that.
Here we are looking at this pope in Brazil on the first Latin American pope on his first trip abroad, and it is to Brazil. I mean, I have to say it's very refreshing, Paulo, to see the simplicity. Maybe that little Fiat in the streets of Rio was too small. I don't know for that setting. But the simplicity of the pope for a simple observer is very refreshing.
Yes, and that's the hook. You know, that's the way he is trying to approach and win people over, to show that, you know, the church is God's people, and you have to talk directly to them and to win them one by one, etc. Will that work? We don't know, but this is the Pope that was chosen.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Pope Francis and Brazil, the Pope of the Poor, a must-win country, we're hearing, for Catholics, and Brazil's own struggles in the streets recently after a decade of super economic growth, tougher times, and some big questions about this country's own politics and society. Andrew Chestnut is with us from Virginia Commonwealth University's School of World Studies. He's in Rio today. Paulo Sotero joins us today from Washington, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Lots of response online here, Paulo, Andrew. Duras says, I love this guy. I assume he means the Pope. He's so refreshing, and for the first time in my life, I hope the Pope has influence in the world. I don't know how old Duras is. Interesting there. Andrew, for you, Ed writes to us. He says, the church is not about numbers. The task of the church is to declare and to propose the church and Jesus Christ. They propose. They don't impose. It's not about numbers. What do you say, Andrew?
Yes, that's true on one level, but it's also the church is an institution as well. And unfortunately, I have to say that the principal reason that we have a Latin American pope is because Latin America has been hemorrhaging members since the 1950s. And we have to remember that Latin America is home to almost half the world's Catholic population. And so the reason that we don't have an African or an Asian pope is because the Catholic Church is prospering in those regions of the global south. Yet, the entire future of the global church really hinges on what happens here in Latin America. The church wisely decided to cut losses in Western Europe, the most highly secularized region on earth, and to look to Latin America, hoping that Latin America was not beyond the point of critical intervention to help revitalize the church. And so, yes, for an institution of 1.2 billion Catholics, yes, numbers are a concern. And that's the number one reason we have our first Latin American pope.
Let me go to Paul, calling from North Kingston, Rhode Island. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm Roman Catholic, but over the last decade or a dozen years, I've felt myself drifting away from the Catholic Church for various factors. But, you know, just basically losing confidence in the Catholic Church. And I feel a closer relationship to Pope Francis than I felt for any other previous pope. And I think his great potential is to somewhat restore confidence and bring people like me, you know, back to the church, you know, be able to reunite many people.
Paul, what is it about Pope Francis? Is it the simplicity that he's become famous so quickly for, his embrace of the little fiat, the kind of poor man's pope, or something else?
Something else. I just see him as not only a humble, but a fair thinking and realizing where the problems are, and you know, being able to face them and speak to them.
Paul, I appreciate your call. Certainly, there's been a warm response to this pope, and I think in no small part because of just that kind of perception of this man. I'm curious about how it works across borders, and we'll see. We are seeing in Brazil right now. Let me get one more here from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Julie's calling. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because, you know, I can't believe I'm the only one that's so incredibly offended by this. You know, as a Catholic, you know, it's great. I'm glad he's promoting the whole Catholic social justice angle. But the Catholic Church is leaking like a sieve because of the huge sexual abuse scandals. That's an enormous part of it. I have heard him barely address that. And as someone who is in a parish right now who just lost their pastor because of a sexual, several sexual allegations made by children in the parish.
Yeah.
You know, great. I'm glad, you know, that he's promoting this, the more address of the poor, and that's important. But really, we have such huge issues that are causing people to leave the church right and left.
Julie, I appreciate your call from Milwaukee. Paulo, what about this issue in Brazil? You can hear Julie's almost despair over it. How has it played for the faithful and others in Brazil?
Well, the problem existed also in Brazil, is I think at a smaller scale than the United States, that we have seen in the United States. Yes, it is a motive of concern for most Catholics and people that have distanced themselves from the Catholic Church and feel invited by Pope Francis to come back. This is an issue that I believe he has started to address. He made some important statements in that regard. I think he will face that. You know, this is a pope that in one of his writings talks about the Vatican as a museum, and that he's more worried about the religious aspect of Catholicism, not the institutional church so much. I think that he is completely aware of the problem that is mentioned, and that he will attack it because he know how ruinous it will be if he doesn't. There is nothing to be reconciled here. Just the church has to be absolutely upfront on this, and the Vatican has stopped to be protective of priests and bishops that have covered up or have abused children and women, etc., etc.
Andrew, there in Rio, I want to come back to you on this issue of Brazil's development. We've heard of it, the flip from 80% rural to 80% urban in a very rapid, very brief period of time, and how that intersects with its religious evolution. Is somehow the development related to the shift away from the Catholic Church? And if so, exactly why, Andrew? What's going on there?
No, there I would actually disagree a bit with Paulo. Surveys have shown that Pentecostals are just as strong in the rural areas of Brazil. So I think the whole, yes, no doubt that the rate of urbanization in Brazil and throughout Latin America, particularly since World War II, has just happened at breakneck pace.
Yeah.
But I think that's a secondary, at best, explanation. And my first book is called Born Again in Brazil, and actually explores the reasons for Pentecostal growth in Brazil. And you know, I saw that the number one reason why nominal Catholics converted in Brazil to these churches was because of faith healing, because of the great Pentecostal emphasis on healing people of their poverty-related afflictions. And let me point out that next on France's agenda today is visiting a drug rehab center here in Rio de Janeiro. And this is a page borrowed exactly from the book of the Pentecostals, who are so good on focusing on these type of everyday poverty-related affliction.
Well, help us put that, though, in an economic context. The Pentecostal focus on faith healing, what, is that opposed to health care in communities where health care is just not available? Or what's going on there?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there is some correspondence to that, to lack of health care as well. But there's a lot of resonance also of faith healing in the United States, too, which
sure.
is a first country, and among the Catholic charismatics who have more of a middle-class base as well. And so it's not only poverty-related affliction, but again, the discourse, the focus on solutions to individual problems is what Pentecostals have been so good at, and that tends to be the centerpiece also of the Catholic charismatics as well. And again, I'll go back to his next visit at this drug rehab center. It is crucial.
And meanwhile, the turmoil has gone on. Even while the Pope's been there, we've seen people in the streets outside of the governor's palace in Rio. Lots of tension in this country, even as it has seen enormous development, even as it moves toward the world, hosting the World Cup, hosting the 2016 Olympics. Jerry in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Jerry, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. You know, I visited Brazil several times, beginning in the early 80s. And my observation then was this. It's never discussed, by the way, or hardly ever discussed. The racism in Brazil is very apparent. It's hardly ever discussed. And that racism has to do with Afro-Brazilians as well as the indigenous people there. They do not share economic growth nor opportunity down there, I've observed. B, as far as the Catholic Church is concerned, in Brazil, for instance, the African Brazilians will incorporate their own form of Afrocentric religion into the Catholic Church. As a matter of fact, a lot of the power brokers, the political power brokers in Brazil will consult with the priestess from the African Church in Brazil before they make a decision.
I'm glad you raised it, Jerry, and let us go right to it. Thanks so much for your call from Milwaukee. Paulo, what about the issue of race and racism in Brazil? You know, the global image is often that, oh, Brazil's this wonderful racial melting pot, but Jerry says, no, it's a big problem.
No, it is a big problem. It was recognized as a big problem in 1995 by a president of Brazil. It is part of the agenda. There have been actions to do that. Actually, the number of indigenous people in Brazil, although there are problems, there's violence against indigenous populations, the number of indigenous people in Brazil has been rising, and I believe that the situation in terms of rights of Afro-descendants in Brazil is much is better than it was. It is not ideal. The problem is still there, but this is part of this big debate about the rituals, the Afro-religious rituals. Well, this is called syncretism. This is did not start yesterday. It is part of Brazilian history that you have Catholics that are perfectly respectable of African rituals. Actually, Virgin Mary has its correspondent in Afro rituals like Iemanjá, and we all know that. We are all very respectful of that.
Andrew, how is the church related to this Afro-descended religious tradition compared to the Pentecostal relationship with
it? That's just a perfect question. We know that Afro-Brazilians are disproportionately Pentecostal. In fact, they've gravitated more to Pentecostalism than they have to Umbanda and Candomblé, the two big African diasporan religions here. So there's just been tremendous success among Afro-Brazilians by the Pentecostals. Yeah, the Catholic Church really has had a problem historically engaging Afro-Brazilians. And so that's another main part of the agenda, revitalizing the church here, is reaching out to the millions of Afro-Brazilians who become Pentecostals or Candomblécistas or Umbandistas. Yes, that's a very important issue here as well. The indigenous are important, but there are only 200,000 indigenous people in Brazil. So.
Wow.
Numerically, that's important.
It's actually 800,000 in the last census. But one thing about the Afro, where I think I see the tension and difficulty for the Catholic Church, and agreeing with you here, is that, the gospel, the prosperity gospel, is something that certainly appeals very much to this rising middle class, more on the Afro, lots of them Afro descendants, and I think the gospel, the prosperity gospel, is something that Pope Francis has some difficulties with. So how to in that competition here is going to be a very difficult one.
Andrew, that's fascinating. In the United States, of course, prosperity gospel had a big run and gained lots of adherents in evangelical churches. When this Pope talks about being the Pope of the poor, he doesn't put it in prosperity gospel televangelist terms, but as Paulo says, that's what he's up against in terms of the, if you will, religious competition.
Exactly, and I think that's going to be the big challenge for to somehow synthesize or reconcile, because prosperity theology also has penetrated the Catholic charismatic renewal, and the chance to prosper, whether it be on a micro basis, both materially and spiritually, is extremely appealing to millions of folks, not only in Latin America, but through the global South. In fact, that probably is the leading type of theology in Christianity today in the global South. So, yeah, it's really going to be a major challenge how this Pope is going to reconcile his more liberationist discourse with what is a preferential option by many Brazilians and those in the global South for the health and wealth gospel, which, of course, was invented by American Protestant evangelists.
I mean, the liberation theology approach, much more political, changed the system, overtly socialist in its day, in its heyday in many parts of the Catholic Church. The prosperity gospel, all about, you know, go out and start your Amway dealership, just the opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. Interestingly, the Pope has not, at this point, proposed any kind of alternatives. We've heard lots of criticism of capitalism. But I think what we can infer here is that he's calling for a kinder, gentler style of capitalism, maybe a la the Scandinavian countries. But yeah, we can't mistake this for the type of call that liberation theologians were making in the 70s and 80s in some instances for a Christian type of socialism. That definitely is not on his agenda.
And meanwhile, Paulo, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
No, at the same time, in his writings, he criticizes, he values some of the motivations of liberation theology, but he really criticizes the methodology because he says, well, when things become ideological, he has a problem because they tend to cease to be religious. His motivation is spiritual, is religious. He is a pastor.
I have to ask you, the World Cup coming, $14 billion or so to be spent on that, and that has caused ire in the streets of Brazil. The Olympics, about the same amount to be spent. You had the FIFA soccer president, Sepp Blatter, warning that they may have made the wrong choice in going to Brazil, given the social tension in the streets there. What about it, Paulo? Is Brazil ready? Is it going to be ready for these big international events? Was it right to invite them with all their costs?
Well, I think that the World Cup will happen in Brazil, will take place in Brazil. Regrettably, cost overruns are there. Regrettably, the mass transit works were not done, will not be done on time. This is the reality we face. We hope that the team will continue to play very well and that Brazil will benefit somewhat from this event. But, you know, some of the expenditures, some of the ostentation is what Pope Francis would probably call a sin.
Yes.
In terms of expenditures for the World Cup.
Maybe, to project a little bit. Paulo Sotero, Andrew Chestnut, great to have you both with us. The Pope right in the middle of all this swirl. Thank you so much for your insights. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.